coming up on the Get Lean, Eat Clean podcast.
It just made total sense that I would cut back on drinking. And I could tell that my weekly habit of having a couple glasses of wine was really taking its toll on my physical and mental health. So I started to just be a lot more mindful about how much I drank, but again, not with the expectation that I would stop drinking. But as I started to just feel better and better physically, and as I took longer breaks in between drinking, I started to just develop a different lifestyle for myself. I started to create more and more desire to just feel incredible. And so it got to the point where I really just, you know, the 1 or 2 days a week that I was drinking just didn't make any sense because it would take me so long to recover from those days. Even though I wasn't having more than a couple drinks, I just really over time lost interest in it and have been able to just create an amazing lifestyle without it. And so it's sort of miraculous to me that I stopped drinking because I never really thought that that would happen, but it has. And just I've never felt better.
Hello, and welcome to the Get Lean, Eat Clean podcast. I'm Brian Grinn, and I'm here to give you actionable tips to get your body back to what it once was 5, 10, even 15 years ago. Each week, I'll give you an in-depth interview with a health expert from around the world to cut through the fluff and get you long-term sustainable results. This week, I interviewed author and master certified life coach, Molly Zemek. We discussed Molly's weight loss journey of losing over 45 pounds and quitting alcohol, how she transitioned from being a professional chef and sommelier to focusing on her health and well-being. We also chatted about being aware of our body's hunger signals, the importance of replacing unhealthy food cravings with healthy alternatives, practicing mindful eating by slowing down, navigating healthy eating with her 3 children, and her 1 tip to get your body back to what it once was. Really enjoyed my interview with Molly. I know you will too. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the show. All right. Welcome to the Get Lean, Eat Clean podcast. My name is Brian Grinn, and I have Molly Zemek on. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you on. Podcast host, author, coach, health coach, life coach.
Yes.
What made you get into this area of coaching?
Well, I usually identify myself as a lifelong food lover. I grew up in a family where food was a big focus. My father is Italian, and we spent a lot of time and energy on food. And I developed a real interest in eating well from a young age. And so much so that I ended up pursuing a career as a professional chef for about 10 years. And then I became certified as a sommelier because I also paired my interest in wine with my love of fine dining. But when I turned 40 and started shifting my priorities and began putting a lot of energy and time into raising a family, I realized that my habits of eating well and eating a lot and enjoying wine every night were having a different effect on my body physically. And the way that I had tried to offset that in the past was through dieting. And that approach just stopped working for me. I really wasn't getting the same results. I continued to feel worse and worse. And so it was around that time that I was introduced to life coaching and recognized that the missing piece for me was uncovering the reasons behind the habits. And once I started exploring that and unlearning a lot of these old habits and outgrowing them, I just my life completely changed. And I knew that this is kind of the missing piece for a lot of people that we don't learn through dieting. And so I started my business as a way to educate more and more people about this.
Yeah, and your weight loss journey was losing 45 pounds. Is that right? And giving up alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
What years did that occur?
Well, it was, let's see, we're in 2024 now. That was 2017 that I started on the path of losing weight, and it took me about a year. I didn't start out with the intention to give up alcohol. I think that's an important point to mention. But as part of my commitment to losing weight and changing habits of eating, it just made total sense that I would cut back on drinking. And I could tell that my weekly habit of having a couple glasses of wine was really taking its toll on my physical and mental health. So I started to just be a lot more mindful about how much I drank, but again, not with the expectation that I would stop drinking. But as I started to just feel better and better physically, and as I took longer breaks in between drinking, I started to just develop a different lifestyle for myself. I started to create more and more desire to just feel incredible. And so it got to the point where I really just, you know, the 1 or 2 days a week that I was drinking just didn't make any sense because it would take me so long to recover from those days. Even though I wasn't having more than a couple drinks, I just really over time lost interest in it and have been able to just create an amazing lifestyle without it. And so it's sort of miraculous to me that I stopped drinking because I never really thought that that would happen, but it has. And just, I've never felt better.
And what was that journey like, the weight loss journey? Like you said that you sort of don't necessarily believe in like diets. What type of lifestyle changes did you make to sort of transform yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, started just really, it began by just paying attention to my body. And that's really what prompted me to lose weight and cut back on drinking in the first place, was just recognizing how certain foods made me feel after I ate them. One of my old habits was having dessert every night after dinner. And I would just, I would go to sleep with this, what felt like kind of like a pit in my stomach. And I would wake up just like hot and sweaty and like not able to sleep well. And I started just paying attention to that. And I noticed that particular habit had that kind of effect on my body. And so I would also pay attention to, okay, when I eat foods that make me feel good, which foods are those? And so I started prioritizing mainly whole foods because I noticed that I feel much better when I eat whole foods. I feel much better when I eat less sugar. I feel much better when I eat less processed foods. So that was kind of the very early stages. And then I started to wait to eat until I actually felt physically hungry. So really kind of taking the focus off of food and redirecting it back onto my body and learning how to listen more attentively to the signals that my body was already giving me as far as what I needed. And then really questioning like, okay, how much food do I actually need to be eating at this meal? In the past, I would make those decisions based on the amount of food that was on the plate or if it was my favorite food, right? It was all driven by kind of what I call my emotional appetite. And when I was listening to my body, I realized like, oh, actually, my body's telling me I've had enough much sooner than that. And there's still food left behind. And so I really worked over time to kind of honor what my body was telling me. But then when I wanted to plan something, you know, just for fun, like I did want to have dessert. I did want to, you know, have something that really might not be what's considered nutritious or part of weight loss. I practiced over time, you know, deciding ahead of time how much I would have and to do it in a very conscious way so that I could really bring my full awareness to the eating process and what I describe as just consciously enjoying the full pleasure that that particular food had to offer so that I could be satisfied with less.
Yeah. And like you hear it nowadays of like intuitive eating or even like flexible dieting where you're not sort of like constrained by like, okay, you can only eat this type of food, right? Like you're seeing this a lot with like, okay, I'm a carnivore or I only eat certain things. And, you know, I'm not totally against that sometimes for some people, because sometimes people need those boundaries, at least initially. But I think flexible dieting and not putting too much restraint around necessarily what you're eating, as long as you can sort of manage that in a like a responsible way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I 100% agree. I think that was a really key distinction for me because of my love of food and my passion for food and cooking is I didn't want to just give up all of the things that I love. I wanted to just learn how to stop at a reasonable portion. And I really do think that that's a skill that you can develop. And it takes time, but I do think that it makes it more sustainable when you can figure out that piece.
Yeah. And the drinking part, I'm curious to know, like, obviously, you, like you said, you went into it not necessarily thinking you were just going to stop drinking. And you weren't drinking, like, it's not like you were like an alcoholic necessarily, right? You were drinking a few nights a week and you realized that maybe that just didn't serve sort of where you wanted to go.
I mean, I started out before I really made any changes. I was drinking every night, like, you know, 2 to 3 glasses of wine every night. But I never felt like I couldn't function. I never was blacking out. I mean, I never felt like it was having such a severe impact on my life that I needed, you know, professional help. I think that's important to mention because alcohol affects people in different ways. But for me, what I recognized was that even that amount was taking its toll on my mood. I just generally was not in a great mood. I didn't feel very motivated. I didn't have a lot of energy. Of course, it increased my cravings for food. And so that's where I started out. And then as I began to be more intentional about how much I would drink and I would give myself breaks, I started to bring a lot of attention to the benefits in that. Instead of constantly thinking like, oh, I'm like missing out on drinking or like I really miss that wine. It's like, wow, I just got an amazing night's sleep. I feel so great. Like there's some advantages to this. So I started to kind of offset some of the desire that I had for alcohol with, you know, creating more desire for my life without it. And that was an important part too, because initially it did feel like I was missing out. Initially, it did feel like all of the pleasure and the fun was gone, that I would watch other people drinking and feel like somehow I was deprived. So I had to figure out how to weave in fun in new ways, weave in connection in new ways, really cultivate kind of pleasure in new ways so that was more valuable to me than having the drink.
Yeah. And I'm sure that took some time. It's like, When you're doing something every night, you don't necessarily realize the impact it's having until you actually like stop doing it for how long it was, weeks or months, and you start realizing how much better you feel without it.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, even some of the clients that I work with just on alcohol, on changing their relationship with alcohol, realize pretty quickly how much they're actually drinking when they start making a plan. It's like, wow, I didn't realize the accumulation of all the drinks until I started writing it down. And so not only is it just the physical impact, it's realizing, wow, this does add up. Like when I start to pay attention to it, there's an awareness that develops that's hard to ignore.
Yeah. And, you know, losing 45 pounds obviously is over a year or two. How long did that take? About a year?
It was a year. Not that it takes everybody that same amount of time. I would say for me, it was like a year to really solidify the new way of life with food, because I could probably lose that weight faster, but I didn't approach it from the perspective of like, okay, how fast can I get this off? Right. I had tried that with dieting. I wanted to see like, how can I lose weight in a way that allows me to create new habits and be able to keep it off so that I don't feel like I'm on a diet for the rest of my life.
And did that prompt you to write your book, Decoding Your Emotional Appetite?
It did. It was an opportunity for me to not only just like share my life story and to combine just my love of writing, which I've had for almost my entire life, but also to translate the work that I do in my business with my one-on-one clients to people who, you know, might not have the opportunity to hire a coach or who are struggling and feel like, you know, they want to give up on diets because diets just don't work for them in the long run. So I wanted just to offer hope. That was kind of my primary objective with the book, and just to make this information more accessible to a larger population of people.
Yeah. And it's a Decoding Your Emotional Appetite, a Food Lover's Guide to Weight Loss.
Yes.
And I mean, I think most people enjoy eating to some more than others, maybe. What are some high level tips in the book as far as like a food lover's guide to weight loss? How is that different from maybe someone else?
Well, this book is really not a diet. I think you can look at the cover and think like, oh, it's like a weight loss guide. This is like a diet that I can follow. But it really is nothing like a traditional diet in the sense that I'm not giving you a list of foods to eat. I'm not telling you to stay within a certain, you know, parameter of calories. What's different is that I help you kind of figure out why you're driven to eat, right? Most of us who really love food place a higher level of focus on food, and we're thinking more about food than we're thinking about our bodies. And so it's about recognizing those patterns and those habits of turning to food so that you can kind of understand, okay, why am I turning to food when I'm not hungry? What are some of the underlying needs that I have that food is not really meant to solve? If I'm not physically hungry, then food is not the solution, right? If hunger is not the problem, food is not the answer. So if hunger is not the problem, like what is the underlying need? And if I take the focus off of food and I start to connect back to my body and ask myself some deeper questions, I can start to piece together some things that might be lacking in my life. So that's part of it. The other part of it is also teaching food lovers how to deliberately include food that they love so that they don't feel like, oh, like this particular thing is bad. Like I can't have ice cream. I can't have pizza. It's like, no, you can have those things, but you have to develop the skill of being able to eat them in moderation in alignment with your body. So I talk about this concept, the sweet spot, like figuring out what's the tipping point of pleasure where I can eat a food that I love, let's say it's ice cream, and experience the maximum amount of pleasure in that while without offsetting the pleasure in my body. And you need to bring, you know, full consciousness to that experience, and you need to be fully paying attention to your body. But once you develop that skill, it's a game changer because you feel fully free around any kind of food that you might want to have when you have the confidence of being able to honor your body.
And what would you say some of the obstacles that could come into play? Like what are some of the main reasons people eat when they're just, is it like boredom? Are they like emotional eating, maybe stressed? Are these some of the cues that people use when they decide to sort of mindlessly eat?
Yes. So what I talk about in the book, as it pertains to your emotional appetite, is anytime you're not physically hungry, like you don't have physical signs of hunger, then your desire to eat is motivated by emotional reasons. And that's it's different for different people. But I talk in the book about four key emotional appetites. One of the reasons why we use food is a way to escape. Right. It's normal for a lot of us to come home after a stressful day of work or a stressful day of taking care of the kids and use food as a way to feel better. That's not because we're physically hungry. I mean, sometimes you might be, but if you're not hungry, it's because you're just trying to kind of escape the emotional distress. Sometimes for people, it's a way to connect, right? You feel lonely. And so food is a friend. Food is a way to connect, or it's a way that you bond with other people is by eating while you're connecting with people. None of these things are bad. I just want to make that clear. But if you're noticing kind of a negative side effect to the way that you're eating, it could be that there's just overeating happening and that you're relying on food too much to solve some of these needs. So, you know, connection, needing to escape stress, certainly boredom, right? Either because you're used to always being busy and it feels uncomfortable to not have anything to do, or because you're spending your time doing things that aren't really satisfying. And so food is a way to just offset that discomfort in the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot, like for me, I try to eat and base it around like performance. And it's interesting because when you get people, and I'm curious to know your thoughts on this, but when you get people exercising and becoming more active, I think like maybe it's a subconscious thing, but then they might start paying more attention to what they're putting in their body in order to perform, you know, not to say that they're some like professional athlete, but in order to perform better in the gym or whatever they're doing. And like for me, that's like a big thing. I always try to experiment and see how I perform best on the way I eat and when I eat certain foods and things like that.
Oh, that's directly related to this because it's about creating a mind and body connection. When we're overeating for emotional reasons, it is, you know, completely mindless and we're not connected to our bodies, right? We're responding to that emotional need. But when you start to notice how your body feels, whether it's like when you're working out or after you've had a bowl of ice cream, you can adjust your eating as a way to optimize feeling good. And so I love the example you gave. It's like if you really care about fitness and you want to feel energized, you want to have the endurance when you're at the gym, how you fuel your body will have a direct impact on that. And so as a way to allow your body to perform its best and to feel its best, you will make intentional choices about how you're going to eat. And so you're really connecting that mental, you know, intention with the way that your body responds.
Yeah. And maybe that's just, I don't know, maybe it's easier for some people to do that than others. Like for me, I don't really drink at all. I used to have some drinks every once in a while, and then I started to realize, well, if I'm going to work out the next day, I know I'm not going to be at my best. And so it's not worth it.
Yeah.
That's not to say that I wouldn't have a drink here and there, but like I really make a conscious effort to sort of strategically do it during times when I don't need necessarily to perform or do something the next day. But maybe this is something you just learn over time. I think when you're in college or right out of school, it's like, oh, okay. you're not really thinking like that necessarily right off the bat.
Yeah, I think it depends too on your unique lifestyle. I mean, it sounds like for you, Brian, you probably really enjoy exercise. You enjoy the benefits. I mean, there's something about it that has made you, you know, passionate about, you know, placing a level of focus on it. And so you have a desire for that outweighs your desire for the food. And I think that's really key in solving this for people. I mean, there are, you know, women who might be at home taking care of kids where the focus is entirely different. Not that they couldn't have a fitness goal, but they're dealing with a different kind of stress and they're managing that stress by eating and drinking. Or somebody else might have a different tolerance to alcohol where they have a glass, you know, a cocktail or a glass of wine and they instantly want more. For somebody else, it might be sugar. And so I think that understanding your unique response and how your body reacts to different types of alcohol and different types of food is a really important piece. Because somebody like you might be fine with like, oh, I'll have a drink every once in a while. It's fine. Like I could take it or leave it. I don't really care. Another person, they have a drink and all of a sudden it's like that little, you know, flicker of desire starts building and building and they start, you know, for another person it's sugar. So yeah, I think it's just, it depends on the individual, and what their desires are and also the unique response of their body.
Also, do you find that some people can just have a drink and be done, but some people, they need to either go all in or nothing sort of thing. Like, it's almost like you said, like you have a little something, like someone can take a carton of ice cream, take a few bites and put it back. Mm-hmm. Other people, once they start, it's like, okay, I could finish the whole carton. What type of advice would you give to those two different types of people? Because, you know, I think, you know, everyone's a little bit different in how they handle these things.
Well, for the individual that has an all or nothing mentality, that often stems from this belief that like more is better. I used to think that when it came to certain desserts, it was like, well, like, what's the point? I'm not going to have like two spoonfuls of ice cream. I'm going to have a couple of bowls. Otherwise, like, it's just not satisfying. And it's first identifying that that's what's leading you to believe that you have to have all of it. Otherwise, what's the point? Right. And it's like, okay, is more really better? Because for me, if I had three bowls of ice cream, I would feel terrible afterwards. And I had to really make that mind-body connection and show myself afterwards, you know what? This is like how you physically feel when you eat this much. Is this really what you want? The answer was no. Like, I thought it was a good idea, but there was a disconnect between my belief and in my body. And so I had to, after the fact, tell myself the truth about it. And then plan accordingly the next time I would decide to have it, keeping in mind that when I started to have the ice cream, I was going to want more. And I did really need to ask myself, is it worth it? Like, do I really, if I don't want a couple spoonfuls, like, what is it that I really want here? I could teach myself to have a couple spoonfuls. But when I started to kind of replace my desire for ice cream with other things, at the end of the day, I just didn't need it the same way I did. So that's kind of one angle to take. Mm-hmm. And then I think for people, you know, I have a number of clients that I work with on weight loss who just like love bread, or some of them love pasta. I don't really care about either of those things. I've never been a bread person. I've never been like, it's not something that I would even plan to eat. It's just, I could take it or leave it. And so for me, it's not an issue. But I do really love desserts. And so for those people who have, you know, a particular food that they find hard to control themselves around, I think it makes sense in the beginning, as you're working on, let's say, losing weight or feeling more in control around food or lessening your desire, to kind of limit those foods for a period of time so that you can start to lessen just kind of the cravings for them, which happens when you give yourself some space. And then gradually work them in a very intentional way by deciding in advance, okay, I want to have a bowl of pasta. I'm going to decide now to have like X amount. I'm not going to be doing it in response to a craving because that makes it harder to stay in control and to stay connected to my body. But I'm going to do it in a very mindful way. When I sit down to eat it, I am going to not have any distractions. I'm going to be using my breathing as a way to just calm down my nervous system. And then I'm going to be eating very slowly so that I can fully appreciate the flavor of it, but also notice when I reach that ideal satiety point, anticipating that I'm going to want more. And when I notice those suggestions, like, oh, just like a couple more bites, I will remind myself I'm fully in control right now. And it's okay that I want more, but I can be more satisfied with less is often what I tell people to practice thinking. Put the fork down. Have a plan for yourself to move on to something else. It's okay if you feel that restless feeling. That's temporary. And as you continue to practice this and notice how much better you feel, and as you start getting the results that you want, you'll develop confidence and you'll lessen that. You'll lessen like your association with eating a huge quantity of that food. It will become more of a normal practice to have less and to want to eat less because you notice how much better you feel.
Yeah, I love that. And I can't remember exactly who I was interviewing, but he mentioned some like hacks to helping with like intuitive eating. And one of them was to like eat with like chopsticks because it'll like slow you down a lot. Like I'd be bad. It would take me a while, especially certain things. Right. But I think eating, like you said, like slowing down everything, like I find even with myself, I can be fairly fast eater. And I think for someone, for most people eating fast, you're not really dialing into your true, you know, like when you're actually full. And if you could just like figure out ways to like slow yourself down, I think that can be a good sort of hack as well.
I think that's really crucial. Usually fast eating is the result of an urge. It certainly is for a lot of my clients where it's normal when you see food and when you're hungry for, you know, to get excited, to want to eat. I mean, we're sort of designed to be that way. I mean, we're meant to desire food. But when we bring that restless energy into eating, and it's our goal to practice staying more connected to our bodies, you have to deliberately calm yourself down ahead of time. And so when I'm working with people, I often say, notice when that restless energy starts. Is it when you're like prepping your food? Is it when you sit down and you just like, you can't wait to dig in? I will take a moment before that first bite. I will calm myself down through my breathing, and I will just set the intention to really savor that first bite. For me, you know, a really good way of staying motivated to do this is like, I don't want to miss out on the flavor of this meal. Like if I eat too quickly, I'm going to miss 50% of the flavor. And then I'm going to feel like I need more afterwards. So being, you know, calm, slowing yourself down, savoring that first bite, really paying attention to the flavor in the first bite really helps to kind of change that tendency of eating quickly. And it gives you the chance to notice what's happening with your hunger so you can stop sooner.
Also, too, I think like cooking your own food. I mean, you as a chef can understand this, right? Like it might take time and you have to like, you know, sort of get the right ingredients, make sure everything works well. And like when you, it's like, I've talked to individuals where they've actually gone out and like done, like hunted these animals. And then, I've never hunted before, but you know, they have such more of an appreciation for that food. And it's like, they don't want anything to go to waste. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a whole new appreciation. And you know, I don't know if I'll ever hunt, but I can totally sort of understand that and sort of relate that back to like cooking for yourself as a way to really appreciate everything that went into that food, as opposed to just always ordering in or going out to restaurants. I think it's like a different mindset.
Yeah, I think so. Although hunting your own ingredients is definitely taking it beyond what I do. I mean, that requires a whole other level of commitment.
Right. Although I would love to be, yeah, being a chef, I'm sure, you know, I'm not saying you went out and hunted, but like, a while back I had some individuals on that talked about, you know, it takes a long time to get your food. You appreciate it that much more. So I guess the point, what would you say to your clients is one of the big tips that you, talk to them about is cooking for yourself, and how do you implement that with your coaching?
You know what? It depends on the individual. I'm all about setting people up to succeed. And there are plenty of people who just don't enjoy cooking. They love to eat, yeah, but they don't enjoy cooking. And so it can be a barrier. And so if it's too hard to get over the barrier of cooking, then I've no problem. I mean, for me, I've got three young kids, so I do most of the cooking, but there are days where I just have so much going on that it's just easier to get takeout. And I don't have a problem doing that. I think keeping your meals simple, but maximizing the flavor allows it to just be easier to eat in a way that feels good and that tastes good. For people who do love to cook, sometimes there is an obstacle of just like being around the food or feeling like they need to taste the food or feeling tempted to eat as they cook. And I help people just appreciate the pleasure of the cooking experience and the smell of food, of, you know, the rhythm of cooking, of the creative process of combining ingredients that doesn't have anything to do with actually eating the food. So I think that really just prioritizing high quality ingredients as much as possible is key, whether you're cooking, whether you're ordering, you know, takeout, whether you're buying something at the store, because that will go a long way to helping you be satisfied with less. So it's kind of, you know, based on individual preferences and how people feel about cooking. But I would say that across the board, that really matters is, you know, are you eating produce in season that's at the peak of its flavor, if possible? Are you buying your protein from a place where you know it's high quality and it's fresh so that you don't have to add a lot to it and you can eat whole foods and feel good and appreciate the taste of it?
Yeah. And I think what helps, like for my wife and I, we don't have kids, but like we have monthly orders of protein that come. We know the source and it's just in the freezer. So it's there. And it's like, all we do is just decide the night before what we're going to have, pull it out. It's not, that's what I mentioned when I talk about cooking for yourself. I'm not saying everyone has to be this like Michelin chef. You know, like I don't know that much. I mean, my wife's actually a decent cook, but, you can keep it simple. I think it's important, but knowing your ingredients and what you're putting in and just being prepared a little bit ahead of the time, I think could help go a long way.
Oh, for sure. Because mindless eating happens because of spontaneous urges. So if you set yourself up with the right food and you're, you know, intentional with your plan, it's much easier to just show up and commit to the way that you want to be eating.
Now, one, issue that comes up with individuals is, you know, they might lose weight, but then they end up putting it back on. What are some of, like, obviously you lost weight over a year or two. What are some of the obstacles that maybe have come in your way or your clients' ways as far as, you know, being able to lose weight, but then also keep it off?
Yeah. So I talk about this inside of my business as the three C's to sustainable weight loss. The first C is commitment. I think what many of us struggle with in terms of both deciding to lose weight and committing to like making that happen is like really being willing to prioritize ourselves and make the necessary adjustments like in our lifestyle to make this a priority, to make our health a priority. But it's not just committing the first time you're going to lose weight. It's recommitting, because none of us show up perfectly on our food plans, right? None of us eat perfectly all of the time. I think that is something that is an obstacle for people, especially with dieting, is they think that they need to be perfect, but nobody's going to show up perfectly and eat perfectly all of the time. And so it's learning how to commit to yourself over and over again. So when there are setbacks and you get off track, like let's say you go through a period like COVID where you're eating more, you're drinking more, you're out of your usual routine, recognizing sooner that you don't feel great and that you need to get back on track allows you to recommit, focus again on your health and really continue to make progress with those habits so that they become a way of life. The second C is consciousness. So as much as possible, really eat without a lot of distractions, really savor the flavor of food, really have a conscious experience in your body so that you're honoring signals of hunger and satiety, and that you're making that kind of your focus every single day, more so than the food. And then the third C is consistency. I think a lot of people just struggle with consistently doing these things over time. But I think when you start to appreciate how good you can feel and the pleasure that you can experience in your body when you're taking care of it, you continue to be motivated by that. And then it's by, you know, noticing, okay, like I had a setback or I've been eating in a way that doesn't make me feel great. How can I get back to feeling good? How can I make my next meal something that allows me to get back to feeling good and consistently showing up and trying to get back to a place of feeling good?
Now, I'm curious, Molly, you have three kids. How do you navigate eating mindfully and with when you have three kids? Because we don't have kids, but I know a lot of parents use that almost as an excuse to not eat well. And what would you say to them? Yeah.
It's not an excuse for sure, although I understand why we make it an excuse. It's just another set of reasons why we justify overeating, right? It's like, well, my kids have chicken tenders or there's all this like junk food around the house. It's not any different than maybe somebody who doesn't have kids, who is in an environment where there are tempting foods around, or who is at the grocery store and walks down the ice cream aisle and feels tempted to buy ice cream. The difference with kids is I think there's a different level of stress for people who are managing kids and are focused on taking care of multiple people other than just themselves. And so I think it's about, you know, figuring out new ways to manage stress, figuring out how to be aware of urges when they happen in the moment and what are the pattern of urges when you want to overeat, and then figuring out strategies to just be present with the urges and not respond. And I think ultimately like giving yourself grace so that when you do have those days where you are eating something that's not part of your plan, that you're not making it mean that somehow you're never going to figure it out, or that, oh, well, it's a lost cause. I might as well just eat everything. I try and use my role as a parent as a way to kind of educate my kids in habits that I didn't really learn. And so that's a big motivator for me, is that when I am paying attention to my body and I'm working on eating whole foods and I'm working on noticing urges, I try and talk a lot about that so that my kids are learning as well, just by me being an example. Same thing with my husband. I mean, I've never told my husband how to eat, but I've really tried to just be in control of what I have control over in terms of my own eating, and then be an example to the people in my family of like, wow, like I'm feeling really good when I eat this way, or wow, like I'm noticing these results when I'm eating these foods over another, or wow, it's really challenging to be around this food, and just talking about it more so that my kids are just more educated in how to be mindful and pay attention to their own bodies.
And how old are your kids?
I have a 13-year-old, an almost 12-year-old, and a 9-year-old. They're all boys.
Okay. So three boys. And do you find like they're starting to, just from you, like sort of talking through how you go through things, do you find that they're starting to, I mean, that's a young age to maybe be self-aware of those things, but do you find that it's rubbing off on them?
Oh, yeah. I get so excited with my middle son because he will often say now, he might think that he wants a dessert after dinner, but then he might say later on, you know what, on second thought, like, I'm really not that hungry. I'm not going to have it. Which is a huge breakthrough, because that's a big thing that we talk about with the kids is like, you can have that, but are you genuinely hungry right now? Like, I just want you to check in with your body. Are you hungry? Do you actually need this? Or, you know, with my oldest son who has a sensitive stomach, when he eats too much chocolate or when he eats like a lot of rich food, his stomach really hurts. And so I just really encourage him to sort of notice that connection and pay attention to the way his body responds. And he started telling me, you know what, I don't want to eat like this particular thing in the morning because I know that I just don't, like, I don't feel that great. I don't have the energy that I want. So it's little things like that right. I feel so excited about, because I realize that they're paying more attention to how food impacts them and they're noticing things like hunger. They're noticing like how they feel when they're not eating a ton of sugar, and they're appreciating that more.
Yeah. No, that's huge. And I do think that one way to deter, I don't know, kids or individuals in general from certain things is like, if they do one thing and they get really sick and then they're like, I don't want to do that. You know, like you said, overeating, or we all know that if we've had a certain food where we just got like ill sick from it, it's like, okay, I'm not going down that path again.
Yeah.
Like a scare tactic, but it works.
Yeah, it definitely does. And you know, it's because that physical discomfort is so extreme. We make the association, between that like physical discomfort and the food, and we lose desire for it. And right. That's kind of at a more extreme level. What I'm teaching people how to do is when you eat too much, notice the discomfort in that and start to tell your brain the truth about that. Or if you eat too much sugar and you're noticing like, I just like don't love like how I feel, or like that I just have no energy, or that I want to take a nap, start telling yourself that so that you recognize the relationship between this particular ingredient and how it affects your body.
Yeah. And like we talked about earlier, eating mindfully in the sense of slowing down and, obviously avoiding highly processed foods, I think can help you become more like aware of how these foods are affecting you. Cause when you're eating highly processed foods, a lot of times you're not even aware of how much you're eating because it's not even filling you up, and it's not even necessarily satisfying, your hunger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So like those two things run big. And I always say, like, for a lot of the stuff we buy for our house, I try to just buy responsibly. I think that's like so important because even with kids, like I'm sure, I don't know, Miley, how you like, you buy the junk food, you're going to eat the junk food, right? Like if you don't buy it and it's not in the house, there's a good chance you're not going to eat it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. Although I don't completely restrict that stuff for my kids. I believe in kind of just like a healthy balance where
sure
they can have some of it, but we do have certain rules as far as like how much or which particular things, because they will have access to that food at some point. And so I don't want sure. them to feel like they've been deprived of it or that it somehow it's forbidden fruit. One of the things that I really appreciate about my childhood is that there was no food that was ever off limits. And my three kids are all athletes, and they're boys, they're always hungry. And not that the processed food is going to fill them up, but I think having some of it in moderation is not the end of the world. But I do really help them pay attention to just the connection between the way they eat and their performance in athletics, because they do really care about performing well. So it's like, okay, well, let's pay attention to the way that you eat and how that affects like your ability to do your best. And that's a big motivator for them too.
Yeah. No, that's so true. I do. Obviously, it's like 80-20, right? Like if you could dial in 80% of the time, the quality foods and single ingredient foods and things, and then that 20%, sort of leave that up to things that maybe aren't as, that maybe don't serve you as well, but, you can sort of, you're not totally neglecting yourself.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Well, this is great, Molly. I know you have some trainings, your podcast. How can we learn more about the things that you're doing?
I have my new book, Decoding Your Emotional Appetite, which comes out on April 2nd. So that's available for pre-order now. You can find out more about that by going to my website, mollyzemek.com. I also have on my website a free 3-day course that includes a workbook and a video training for people who want to start developing more mindful eating and drinking habits. And then my podcast is a great free resource for people, Weight Loss for Food Lovers.
Love it. And, I always ask this question to pretty much all my guests. If you were going to give one tip to get your body or your mind back to what it once was, maybe 10, 15 years ago, what one tip would you give that individual?
I'm going to say two things. First, okay. Like that we actually already talked about was like, just begin to pay attention to where you are right now. And if you're not feeling great, use that as just really important, information, feedback coming from your body that something needs to change. But then also just like really lean into the belief that it's possible to feel better. So many people, I think, are stuck because they just either think they're too old or they've tried too many times or it's just like too hard. It's not too late, and you can feel much better than you do right now, but you need to first believe in yourself and be willing to not give up on feeling better. That really is like the turning point for everybody. Is you have to not give up on yourself and decide that, you know, you are going to, you know, believe in the possibility that you could feel even better no matter how old you are. And if that's possible, what would you begin doing today to start making some changes?
Yeah. Love that. Love that. Well, this was great, Molly. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I will definitely put links for all, you know, for your course, your trainings, and your book, so people can learn more about you.
Great. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thanks again, and have a great day. Thanks for listening to the Get Lean, Eat Clean podcast. I understand there are millions of other podcasts out there, and you've chosen to listen to mine, and I appreciate that. Check out the show notes at briangrin.com for everything that was mentioned in this episode. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast and share it with a friend or family member that's looking to get their body back to what it once was. Thanks again, and have a great day.